We just have 20 seconds. But how dangerous is this for Petro and Marquez? Some of their speeches they give behind bulletproof shields. They've had death threats against them.
Absolutely. Extremely dangerous to them. Extremely dangerous to everybody in the whole country. There was an armed strike by paramilitary forces throughout half of the country. This is linked to the armed forces. Yes, it's dangerous for them, for everybody. We all live, including Francia and Gustavo, under constant death threats and under a state of genocide.
We have to leave it there. We will continue to follow this, of course. Manuel Rosenthal, Colombian physician, activist, part of Pueblos and Camino, People on the Path. That does it for our show. Happy birthday to Angie Karen. Welcome back to Torino Nudura. I'm Amy Goodman, Juan Gonzalez.
Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 7th Annual Vanport Mosaic Festival, on now through Tuesday, June 7th in Portland. The Vanport Mosaic is back with its annual Memory Activism Festival to, quote, remember, repair, reclaim, and reimagine our collective story. The festival will center on the 80th anniversary of the building of Vanport, once Oregon's second largest city, and the largest World War II federal housing project in the United States. Highlights include Vanport the Musical and a panel discussion on Portland's past, present, and future of affordable housing. Again, that's the 7th Annual Vanport Mosaic Festival, on now through Tuesday, June 7th in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Stand by me. Stand by me. It's 8:01 on Tuesday at KBOO Portland. It's time for Too Much Information with your hosts, Tracy Simmons and Abe Proctor. Stay tuned.
And welcome. Too Much Information on KBOO 90.7 FM. My name is Abe Proctor. Joining me, as she does each and every week, Tracy Simmons. Good morning, Tracy.
Good morning, Abe. Good morning, listeners.
The number to call this morning, sorry, Tracy, didn't mean to cut you off. Let me just get this out there into the ether. Number to call this morning, 503-231-8187. Tracy, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, it looks like it might be a mildly sunny day in Portland, something I need badly. I think we went the whole month of May without an 80-degree day, and that's unfortunate, as is the unfortunate situation that happened at the outset of the Rose Festival, which is going on right now, which brings me tons of joy every year, that I was not able to follow through on my plans Saturday because it was pouring, raining. Was hoping to go with my daughters, as we do every year, when it's available, to ride some rides and have some fun and breathe some fresh air in Portland. But hence, we'll have to do it sometime this week.
You know, it's, what can you say? It's been the soggiest spring, I think, most of us can remember. But yeah, we do what we can. We're emerging into what we hoped, I think, a few months ago to be a mildly or relatively COVID-free summer. That is yet to be seen. But we have something a little bit off the beaten path we want to talk about with you today. And that is the concept, or a concept, called agnotology. What is agnotology, Tracy?
Yes. So Abe, you know I am all about sociology. I am a sociology minor, and only because my college advisor told me that I would be counting things and in some back room making $40,000 a year if I pursued my love of sociology as a major. So I do have a minor, and I do have a minor in sociology with my multiple degrees that I have. But this is an area that still enthralls me. I am fascinated by sociology. And I unfortunately, when in my spare time, I read sociology papers and delve into sociology, and I really geek out on the stuff. So, you know, I have been in this interesting space. And the reason I talk about even going to Rose Festival is because my spirit has been very heavy lately. Since our last show, of course, we know about the Uvalde mass shooting, 19 children dead. Still waiting on somebody to do something who has the power to do it. Like we've heard from Joe Biden, he's not able to do it. He's waiting on Congress. Congress is waiting. Their thumbs are stuck somewhere else and not able to move the levers of power to do anything about this. And so, you know, I keep like wondering, like, what? Why is this, right? Of course, there's this cycle of what happens after a mass shooting. And we'll talk a little bit about this even in the context of today's conversation, that, you know, there's the event, the mass shooting event, the media is like on an extravaganza. We want to know everything about this mass shooting. We want to know about the shooter, what the shooter did, what happened at the incident, right? There are thoughts and prayers that are sent from Congress, you know, social media. There's all these conversations happening about, you know, guns and debates happening between, you know, people who have absolutely zero ability to, you know, instill policy. And some of those people are absolute gun nuts. So you have that part. And then, you know, we kind of just wait around hoping for somebody to do something. And then we get back to normal until the next mass shooting. Well, because these things are happening in such rapid succession, you know, there's not been a back to normal, right? We're still having these debates. We're still waiting on somebody to do something. And the question that came up for me is like, why do we continue doing nothing? And so I stumbled upon an interesting thread about this concept of the cultural production of ignorance and how that phenomenon is very central to America as a capitalistic endeavor. So we're going to talk about that today, and we're going to maybe make some connections between the realities of our lives, what we know about certain things that we're doing in society, and how big companies, you know, big oil, big tobacco, NRA, big guns, a military industrial complex, I mean, all of the things, right, help us produce a society that questions whether what it knows to be true is actually true, right? And so we can make the connection of, you know, do having more police make us safer? Well, that there's obvious, you know, data, both qualitative and quantitative, that lets us know that there is not a real relationship between being safer and having more police, right? Paying more money for police is something we've always done, and we have, unfortunately, one of the least safe societies, and it's due to also guns, right? So do more guns make us safe? Well, we know that that's not true because we are, of course, the only developed nation in which mass shootings happen what feels like every day, right? Is there a connection between tobacco and cancer? Well, obviously, at this point, we've broken through that cultural ignorance, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But there's still the conversation out here of what degree do, you know, fossil fuels harm the environment, right? We're still having those debates, although we know, right? So there's a way in which these large industries and the lobbyists for these large industries to continually propagate misinformation, disinformation, so we don't actually do anything. And the people, right, who are in their pockets, the politicians, start off those same talking points. And it's really, really structurally a sound way to stop anything from you know, meaningfully happening to change and move us in a different direction. And it's all about the money.
Does that help? It does help. But I want to dig a little deeper, and I want to engage our listeners on this topic too, because I'm very interested to hear in once we sketch out this term and what it means and give some examples. I'm very interested to hear what our listeners, in what other ways this phenomenon is at play in our society. So agnotology, we've defined as the cultural production of ignorance. So this is the manufacture of uncertainty or ignorance or ambiguity in the public discourse in order to serve a certain set of ends. Now, you gave an example of the tobacco industry, which I think is a really good one here. So if we're talking about manufacturing ignorance regarding the use of tobacco, this means we're going to see people, for example, casting doubt on the link between smoking and cancer. They're going to attempt to immunize the producers of tobacco against any of the consequences of their product, because we've already obfuscated the link between the use of their product and deadly disease.
Yep.
Yes. And they're also going to, and I think listeners will take this thread to some obvious places, they also attempt to focus the debate, instead of on the deadly nature of their product or on its addictive nature, they try to focus the debate on the individual responsibility of tobacco users. We're not liable because each of these people makes their own choices. Somebody chose one day to pick up a cigarette and light it up. We can't be held responsible for that. Besides, as we can see, there's all kinds of doubt about whether or not our product already, you know, causes cancer. You know, and we have an army of lawyers there to immunize ourselves against any potential linkage there. So this is how, this is one very stark example of how ignorance is manufactured in our culture in order to either achieve a certain end and establish a new status quo, or to preserve a status quo that's already there. And this is a fascinating concept, Tracy. I mean, in an allegedly rational republic, right? The United States was, in the eyes of many historians, sort of the high water mark of the European Enlightenment, right? A rational society based on the ability of people to govern themselves. Why then, in the midst of this society, would people manufacture and inject ambiguity and ignorance into the discourse? Why would they do that?
Well, I think I already said, right? It's about the money, right?
It's about the money.
Selling more things. And of course, you know, with the big tobacco as a great example, right? We had, you know, folks blaming the individual people and their individual health and behaviors. We had a huge shield, right? If anyone saw the movie The Insider with Russell Crowe, you know, kind of exposed, you know, the whistleblowers within the organization who were literally shut down, who were saying, you know, blinking red lights, like, hey, our product is really dangerous. But those folks were literally, you know, sent to the corner, canceled, for lack of a better term. And shut down to shield the industry itself from any responsibility. Well, I mean, even if we talk about big tobacco, right, cigarettes products are still being sold. They found a cuter way in the vape industry to sell it. And we know, by and large, that the people that picked up on that were younger people, teens, unfortunately. And so people can still smoke, but, right, we've made it through this kind of revelatory expose of the tobacco industry and its link to bad health outcomes to making smoking less attractive, right? We don't allow smoking in public in most places. Right, besides maybe the outside area of a bar, you know, most businesses say no smoking within 10 feet of our door. You know, you can't smoke on airplanes anymore, right? And made it a not cool thing to do by and large anymore. And that has been a 40-year effort, right? We're talking about 1979 is when some of the you know, really concrete information came out that the tobacco industry was fighting, you know, through the 90s for any accountability for their product. So they have, of course, now less lobbying power. Most people see smoking as, you know, probably a not good thing to do. Even people who still smoke, right, you know, are always talking about how they want to quit. And you can see, you know, smoking cessation itself is its own industry now, to help people stop smoking. Of course, there's the nicotine patches and all of the other industries that crop up once one industry goes out of favor. And the question is, right, as we're talking about gun manufacturers and the gun industry itself, even with the waning power of the NRA, who hosted a annual conference within days of a mass shooting of 19 school children and two adults, right? Just in what bad taste is that? But they have waning appeal, right, as an organization. But the industry itself still has a stranglehold, a chokehold on our politicians, who will continue to say that guns don't kill people, people kill people, that it's a mental health issue, that we need to, you know, address people's mental health, all while stopping, of course, Medicare for all, any, you know, meaningful policy to make sure everyone has access to and high-quality mental health care and support, right? So it's once again, right, we begin to unpack one little box at a time of, like, okay, so guns don't kill people, people kill people. We've had no success regulating people, but we actually had success regulating guns, right? So when there was an assault weapons ban, we saw that those guns didn't proliferate in our society. And as soon as that ban was taken off, now what is the result, right? Most of these mass shootings are done with an assault-style rifle or AR-15. Right, so we can't even, for those folks, talk about what an AR-15 is, because as soon as you begin talking about that, then they're like, well, that's not an AR-15. Well, actually, a bump stock is, you know, and so we get into this swirl of what even we're talking about banning that once again stops the conversation. It's that cultural production of ignorance where we sit and spin, literally, the conversation to inaction.
So then all of a sudden the onus is on the gun control advocates to precisely identify the types of weapons they want to ban, to spell out in minute detail exactly how their regulations would, in effect, take effect. So really, it's shifting the burden away from what is obviously the problem, which is these high-capacity guns and high-capacity magazines that allow murder on an industrial scale. That is clearly the problem. That is clearly the weak point in our civilization that needs to be addressed. But instead, we're over here in the weeds talking about, you know, just exactly what constitutes an assault-style weapon. And yeah, like you said, oh, there's differences of opinion about what a bump stock is and whether that actually makes a non-automatic weapon into an automatic weapon. And all of a sudden, it's the gun control advocates who are doing the work. When, you know, I think in any sort of sane, rational world, like the one we're supposed to live in, like the nation we're supposed to live in, that onus would be on the people who are producing these weapons of mass murder. So, yeah, the deliberate manufacture of cultural ignorance. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. I'd like to hear from listeners this morning about other aspects of our society in which you see this phenomenon, agnotology, playing out. Other areas of our society where we see the deliberate manufacture of ignorance there to achieve somebody's end or to preserve the status quo. Because really, this is an idea, Tracy, that once you latch onto it and once you start following it, you see it everywhere in our lives.
Oh, yeah. It's like mushroom hunting. Once you know what you're looking for, it's like, oh, there's a mushroom. There's a mushroom.
So Tracy, what are some other ways in which we see this phenomenon? Or if you'd rather, let's take the gun control question. What are some other ways that we see this playing out?
Yeah, absolutely. So, right, the conversation that's been happening about schools and mass shootings in schools has been focused on doors now, right? And so if anyone ever saw the movie Lean on Me, you know, the principal of the school, Joe Clark, was trying to make his school safer. And he noted, right, this is, you know, New Jersey, New York, kind of grimy inner urban school, lots of crime and drugs happening in the school. School, of course, underfunded, mostly majority students of color, kind of that story. So you've seen that story. What Joe Clark does is lock all the doors. He's got chains on all of the exterior doors, so there's only one entry. And guess what happens to Joe Clark? He ends up in jail for breaking the fire code. You can't have a large building with only one entry and exit point, right? So as we're even having this conversation right now, there was recently a stampede at a baseball field this weekend where there were loud noises that made people feel like there was a mass shooting, and people started running and trampling each other. That's what happens, unfortunately, if you only have one exit point, that people start running and trampling over each other. So people don't just die of a potential, you know, mass shooting event. They also die of trampling over each other. It's the most ridiculous solution, right? And hardening schools, right? Having security guards, having police, you know, which we know if you have police in schools, unfortunately, because of the way in which our society works, you're going to have unfortunate, disproportional, you know, discipline for the black and brown students, because police and black and brown students just don't quite go together. So you have this environment where people are supposed to be learning, and now we're calling to harden those targets and prevent people from being able to come and go from those, especially in the event of a fire or mass casualty event. It's the most ridiculous and cynical response, but it's anything but the guns, right? Of course, we all know that the NRA and the gun lobby has used a lot of energy to block research into gun violence. And so there's not a canon of data that goes back past probably about 2006 or so, because other organizations started collecting their own. And so every town is a great resource for gun violence and gun statistics. And the work that they do is critical in also developing some cultural knowledge about the impact of guns and the guns by the numbers. So there's a data set to pull from to say, oh, once that, you know, ban came off, this is what happened, right? The gun industry has done everything to obfuscate data in their pursuit of maintaining this cultural ignorance. Of course, there's also been conversations about family structure, as if that is something that can be legislated or a policy can be made. We saw some folks, you know, talking about those poor little boys without dads in the home. It's an insult to many men that I know who did not grow up with a father in the home, but are amazing fathers, amazing humans, and would never harm another person. So please stop missing me with that one. It really is actually harmful, yeah, to use that as an argument. And to also say then what? That if you are a single, unmarried, unwed mother, that you have to be married to somebody else to be able to raise a child. You know, we're already trying to, once again, legislate women's bodies and wombs when we know that the, you know, leading cause and actually only cause of unwanted pregnancies is unregulated penises. So, right, once again, right, we're doing everything but addressing the actual issue, because the actual issue is addressing the people who have power. are y'all getting this? Like, is this connecting?
Hey,
everyone?
The problem is not penises, Tracy. It's the individual owners of penises. Okay, that's the problem.
I mean, it's tiresome. It's tiresome. Spirit is just weary, and I've been really trying to take care of my energy, but it's all coming into such clarity for me that it's like, okay, what do I do with this? What is my role here? So I guess my role is to let you all know, and for us to all talk about this as we begin to really create the direction for change. I know people continue to say, this time will be different. Well, I thought that when Sandy Hook happened.
Yeah, that's kind of where this debate ended, right? If we're not going to do something after a bunch of school kids are gunned down in their classroom in cold blood, if we're not going to do anything then, we're not ever going to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how it feels now. Here it is again. I mean, in any, I keep invoking this term rational society, but any rational society, once would be far too many times for something like this to happen. And we've seen this in other countries around the world. Australia took pretty drastic action after a mass shooting there, and now they have all but eliminated the problem of gun violence. I'm not going to say it's gone away entirely, because it hasn't. The same with Norway, the same with New Zealand. We see what happens when rational societies take rational steps and act in good faith. We've seen what can happen to address some of these problems. And I think acting in good faith is the key to this problem. And when we're talking about agnotology, when we're talking about the deliberate manufacture of ignorance, we're talking about dealing with people who are not acting in good faith and will never act in good faith.
Well, I mean, literally hours after this happened, Justin Trudeau introduces a strict control on handguns in Canada. So it can happen. I mean, there were like, 30 people that showed up at Justice, Alito's house. after the docket was released about taking away a person's right to choose with bodily autonomy whether they have a child or not, and like the next day, legislation came out to stop that from happening, saying, "Oh, you can't go to their private homes and protest." So, action is taken all the time without any thought about it when it is something that protects power. But in this case, we're protecting power through inaction. And once again, we will see more people, including more children, die while we sit on our hands and point the finger at who can do something about it and take no responsibility. It is the most frustrating, ridiculous place that I can see a society being in. And we're there in many different areas. Kind of going back to the climate change and climate action piece around fossil fuel producers and their playbook on, their playbook on, using this cultural production of ignorance. They've been casting doubt for years about the link between burning fossil fuels and climate change. Some will say, it's a made-up Chinese hoax. Wink, wink, y'all know who said that. There are, folks who have said, it's about certain kinds of fossil fuels, or it's about the methane gas produced from meat, and just, making up, whatever suits the moment to, kind of delay, to point fingers over at the shiny object over there, so no one's focusing on them, right? And we've also, in this, shifted a lot of responsibility to the consumers, right? Are you turning off the lights when you leave that room, right? Did you spend $100,000 on that electric vehicle that, was available to you? We know also that the very small things that we've even shared about to try and reduce the impact of climate change are very small things. But if the companies themselves that sold us these products had been regulated, right, we wouldn't even be in this space. I think we talked a little bit about, saving the ocean from plastics and the ban on straws and, what a very small and sometimes ridiculous thing when we could just say stop making plastic straws, right? Like, we have to individually make some choices because, once again, right, it's about the consumers, not about the industries that produce these harmful things for our society.
All right, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. You're listening to Too Much Information on KBOO 90.7 FM. Let's go to the phones. Robbie, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I kind of wanted to bring up just a little elephant in the room when it comes to the gun violence here is the fact that America's main export is guns and weapons. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just kind of been brandished into us. I mean, literally a few months ago, people were supporting, you know, the military complex industry with the support Ukraine stuff. I find that was a massive push from the same gun manufacturers and the same type of violent stuff. I mean, just, you know, a few months ago, we were helping them with lethal aid. And so I think it's just kind of ingrained into us, all the violence and the idea that weapons are somehow just a part of this nation, unfortunately.
I would agree. Yeah, I think they've become synonymous. If you live in the United States, gun culture is part of the ticket.
Yeah, and I think it goes back down to the, you know, origin story of America, right? We could have stole the land. We could have stole people without the guns, right? The guns is what got us here. And so there has to be some kind of reckoning for all of that as well, which also does not play into the debate. I mean, literally, I posted something this weekend on Twitter, and I had folks in my mentions with the most racist, ridiculous bullying, actually, if, you know, I was able to be bullied. But it was like, no, that's not true. It is true. This is the evidence that we have. Native Americans were killed with guns, and that is how we got this land. Black people were, you know, used guns on to steal them from other countries and bring them here. And the guns were then used to reinforce their servitude. Like, stop. There are folks who just won't even acknowledge that that is the truth of guns. Like, oh, no, it was about, you know, the land and about the wildlife. Yeah, just like the same people will tell you they need an AR-15 to go hunting or an AK-47 to go hunting. What are you hunting? Stop.
Am I so bad at it? Are you still there, Robbie?
Oh, yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. Please continue. We kind of hijacked your phone call there.
Oh, no. I was enjoying listening. I love the show, you know, but, you know, again, it's just interesting to me because, like, even the people on who are on the liberal left side and wanting to be supportive of peace and, you know, not supportive of guns, you know, we were all just supporting lethal aid given to Ukraine a couple, you know, months ago. And I just find it that in our heads, you know, I think that you were talking about, like, it wasn't cognitive dissonance, but just this idea, these lies that we tell ourselves on the one side, and I see the hypocrisy on the left side as well.
Okay. All right, thanks for the call. Let's go to Ken. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to comment, A, to the last caller, kudos for calling out that elephant. But also, my main comment is people kill people no matter what. It doesn't matter if they do it with a gun, if they do it with a knife, if they throw a stone. David threw a stone at Goliath. Are they going to outlaw stones? No, they still stone people to death in the Middle East. In the Midwest here in the United States, young boys still bring their little rifles to school so they can pick off rabbits in the field at lunchtime to bring home for their moms to cook at dinner. That's a fact. The point is, if somebody wants to harm somebody else, they'll use their bare hands. It doesn't matter. Until you re-educate the public, until you take away all the masculine, toxic, I don't care what you want to call it, but until you take away all that toxic attitude about what it takes to be a man, we'll get past all this. Women don't send their daughters off to fight. They're smarter than that. They know better than that. They know how to resolve issues without having to resort to violence. It's not about the gun. I grew up with guns. I don't go out wanting to, you know, I don't drive around with my guns. making myself readily available to have an issue. You've got to educate the people, and you got to stop portraying all of this crap all over the internet, all over the radios and the televisions, showing us all the violence all the time. We grew up in the 60s and the 70s. We didn't have mass shootings at schools, but we had on the news every night 2 more shootings in New York, 3 shootings down in D.C., 5 people dead in a road rage in Miami. But we didn't have school shootings like we have today.
That's true. We didn't have these things, which brings me back to your original point. Essentially, you're making the argument that that it's people who will kill people, that the gun is merely a medium, right? A gun is merely a way to square that circle, to get from the intent to do harm to the doing of it. That's the argument you're making, essentially, right?
Yeah.
Well, see, the point is, though, I don't buy that. And here's why. A gun, especially guns in the post-industrial age, I'm not talking about the sorts of guns that were around when the Second Amendment was drafted. Guns enable the killing of other human beings on an industrial scale. It means that when you connect that, when you close that circuit, right, when you bridge that gap between the intent to do bodily harm and the doing of bodily harm, if you close that gap with a semi-automatic weapon, that means that a whole bunch of people were going to die. Think about it. If that man had walked into this school in Uvalde, Texas, with a knife, do you think we'd be talking about the kind of carnage, the scale of carnage that we're talking about now? No, we wouldn't. The fact is that a gun is a weapon of industrial scale killing, or more traditional weapons, like you mentioned that people are still stoned to death in the Middle East. That's a problematic comment, but that's a question for another day. Now,
wait a second. Uh-huh. My handheld knife, my knife at my side, is regulated by a size and it has to be visible. I can't walk around with throwing knives or throwing stars because I can cause a whole lot more damage. So
if you're arguing that you can cause more damage with a knife or some throwing stars than you can with a semi-automatic weapon, I think we're not talking about the same measurable reality here.
Watch.
I think you're off knife fantasy land.
Go to a professional knife thrower with your
sidearm. Go to a professional.
I'll put money on the knife thrower.
All right, so let's come up with a hypothetical here. Okay, so we're gonna send a professional knife thrower and somebody with a semiotic assault weapon into a crowd of people and ask them to do their worst. My money is on the person with the gun every single time.
Sure. No, I can't disagree with you on that. But the point is,
okay,
at a certain point, we make something illegal, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you got a point with why are we putting all these guns out there that cause all this damage? Now, logic would dictate if you want to stop that, if you want to stop that activity tomorrow, our history shows, let all the black people and the Hispanic people start buying these AR-47s like there's no tomorrow, and I can guarantee you they'll put a halt on it, and you know they will.
Okay, I think we're going to leave it there to give some others a chance. Thank you for the call. Tracy, what's your response to all that?
My response is I have no idea what the point of that call was because it was all over the place. It was, once again, anything but the guns. Let's talk about knives. Let's talk about other weapons. We've never heard of a mass stabbing that was successful that took out 20 or so people. It's just not a thing, right? So once again, right, anything but the guns. Let's distract. Let's talk about my own individual experience with guns. I don't drive around with a gun, right, the caller. And I appreciate the call, but I do want to pick this apart, right? And then began talking about, well, with you, that if, you know, it was a question of knives or guns, he had to agree that, you know, it's the guns, right? And then backs it up with, and the blacks and Mexicans, if they were to go out and get AK-47s and arm themselves the way that I've seen some people who don't have those backgrounds armed, that it would be regulated, right? So we know there's a racial component to this conversation that also, to me, is the elephant in the room, because the original intent of the Second Amendment, as denoted by historian and scholar Carol Anderson, who happens to be a black woman, who continually gets her arguments poked holes in as being the real racist, has said that 2A came into view around the time that we were seeing mass uprisings of slaves, enslaved people, in all of the United States that were slaveholding states, as well as in other countries that had slaveholding states. And so the idea was that if the government at some point as a whole turned its back on slave owners, that those slave owners would have to have state militias to quell slave insurrections, right? So the idea was never about an individual's right to own weaponry. The idea was about a state's right to protect that state's rights to enslave people.
Yeah.
And of course, right, we can add in conversations about what was happening on the plains and, you know, manifest destiny with slaughtering Native American people to continue stealing their land as there was that westward expansion. So, like, let's really get clear about this. We can talk about everything but the guns, because that is what they want us to be talking about. But the reality is there's a long-standing history, and in the critique of our history of gun culture, it goes back to, you know, oppressing people, stealing land, and stealing people. You had to have guns to be able to do that at the scale that it was done. And these same guns kill people on a scale that, as you noted, is industrial and will continue as long as guns are widely, readily available, and especially to younger people who haven't fully developed their brains, haven't fully developed who they want to be in the world, and have access to these weapons of war. It's ridiculous. It will continue happening as long as we can continue not having the conversation about guns.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're absolutely right that there is a racial component to this conversation, because we can't forget, of course, Ronald Reagan, that great pacifist and champion of gun control, actually signed into law one of the most far-reaching pieces of gun control legislation in the history of U.S. jurisprudence, after some Black Panthers, armed Black Panthers, marched on the California State Capitol in Sacramento in the late 60s. So, yeah, there is absolutely a fear amongst white people in this country, and I would say particularly amongst gun-owning white people in this country, that people of color will arm themselves to a similar degree. I think that's absolutely a fear. And so I think the question then, perhaps, should be for those white people, why are you so frightened? Why are you so frightened? If you believe that an armed populace is a safe populace, then why don't you want people of color to have a bunch of guns like you do? I don't know. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Let's go to Dr. Freddie. Good morning.
Good morning. Is my radio too loud?
No.
Nope, we hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Hi. It's amazing how you're absolutely correct. Everything you can talk about, every issue in the world except the gun, the almighty gun. It's sort of a projection of the culture that's in control. That's a part of the appendage of that body. The Second Amendment is just used as that, as a tool to say it's a right to be individually gunned. Everybody owns one, should be able to own one, unless you're brown, black. And then the other thing is, racism is alive and well. Uvalde, that murder at that place was a horrible thing. But are the Republicans going to do anything about it? Is the filibuster going to stop? McConnell been in there. He should be out 1,000 years ago. He's so old, he don't know what he's doing. He's sick. All those people are sick. America's going down a rabbit hole really fast. And I'm going to tell you now, until something happens dramatic in this country, everything's going to remain the same. Everybody says, we'll pray about it, and we're sorry, and a couple of tears get shed, and people say, we're going to do something. They're not going to do anything. They haven't done anything, and they will not. I don't know what it's going to take, but I do know America is in a mess. This is not a place that I'm proud of anymore. I used to be. Thank you very much. Have a good day. Bye.
Thank you, Dr. Freddie. Tracy, go ahead.
Boo! I mean, I think we should all be ashamed. And I feel like there are people who, you know, there are people who are incapable of shame. And they continue to express thoughts and prayers and do nothing. And, you know, I heard from a Jewish person where in their faith, if you pray about something and have some ability to do action on that something and nothing happens, your prayer is like poison, right? It's actually like a sin to pray about something, have an opportunity to do something about what you're praying for, and continue to sit on your hands. And so, once again, right, can we bring back shame? Is shame like no longer a thing? And it, folks are also talking about, you know, Howard Dean and the yaw, you know, the very loud, weird noise that he made, that, you know, literally put him out of the running for being president of the United States, you know, and this weird noise, right, was the least to me, of course, of my concerns. But folks ran with that. Right now we have people exactly like Mitch McConnell, like, you know, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, who continue to say, I will do anything to stop, but I won't do that. That concept, that beautiful filibuster, which is also, you know, a monument to racism in this country, that allowed slaveholding states to have a balance of power despite having, you know, a numerical majority of people. And, of course, that numerical majority was, of course, diminished by the three-fifths clause that said that black people and enslaved people were only three-fifths counted as a human. So, right, we go back to all of these things, and I continually say that the through line is racism, and the reason we continue to do nothing, and as every town and other organizations come out with data, they're telling us some stark information, right, that the people who are victims of gun violence are more likely to be low income, more likely to be poor, more likely to be people of color, and once again, right, that also fuels the inaction. Who is harmed? Who is burdened by this thing that we call our right to bear arms? And if it's not the people who make the rules, they have no reason for action.
Yeah, that's it. That is spot on. And frankly, this argument that we engaged with a couple of callers ago, that you know, people kill people. It's not the gun. It's irrelevant. If somebody wants to kill someone, they're going to find a way to do it. I would offer, I would suggest that argument is a prime example of what we're talking about today on this program,
exactly,
which is agnotology, which is the deliberate manufacture of ignorance in the public discourse. So if people buy that whole line that, oh, it doesn't matter, then essentially the waters have been muddy to the extent that, you know, nothing happens. And it's all of a piece. It's all of a piece with this overall strategy by the gun industry to ensure that they're able to go on and manufacture and sell as many weapons as they possibly can. And one of our previous callers' points was right on the money when they suggested that you know, the United States is the world's greatest perpetrator of violence if you trace the source of weapons you know, back to their original prominence. There's no doubt about that. As Dr. King even observed late in his life, my government is the world's greatest purveyor of violence today. It's absolutely true. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Let's go to Harry.
Oh, greetings, and thank you for taking my call.
Hello.
What Biden made a speech after the Texas shooting saying he wanted to outlaw 9mm bullets, and the reason why he wanted to do that, because there was a few articles that identify the victims of the Texas shooting by DNA because the bullets just tore the children apart. They couldn't recognize them. Also, the police and the fire department have battering rams and axes. They could break into a door, but for some reason they waited 45 minutes before, while people were hearing the shooting. One of the parents was handcuffed and thrown on the ground because he was going crazy, you know, hearing the shooting, and the police were doing nothing. And what is your opinion about of maybe changing the different types of bullets or guns or things like that?
Mm. Thanks, Harry. I have lots of thoughts. Of course, I've been thinking about this for a while. And once again, Ray, if there's a gun that police are so scared of that they won't go into a building when their job is to save lives, supposedly, right, we've got to start asking questions about that as well, right? Because the first, you know, conversation about what happened at Uvalde was, well, the police were heroes, you know, they took down this gunman, and then you start hearing all the rest of it spill out. Like, they were waiting there, they were basically threatening the parents who were wanting to run into the school and get their children. There were some reports that police themselves ran into the school to get their own children, to not get other people's children, right? So the DOJ is doing an investigation into what happened, right? The response to this mass shooting. The shooter had shot people outside of the school, or shot at people outside of school, and then went into the school and was allowed to be in there for upwards of an hour before, you know, someone got them. Right? There's conversations mm-hmm. about body armor and whether or not body armor should be available. Why would it be available to a citizen? That is, once again, a weapon of war, a weapon that should be reserved for people who are going in to save lives, not for people going in to take lives. So why is body armor available to people? Now, with the question of guns, right, there's just too many of them. We have more guns than people in our society. That doesn't bode well for life and safety. And so we've got to begin, you know, having these real conversations about what does the gun do for you, the gun owner, and what are you worried and afraid of that's predicating this whole society around fear, and fear that everyone should have a gun. But these are just questions that I don't have the answers to. I don't think anyone necessarily has the answers to. But the gun folks will tell you it's their God-given right. And what I know about Jesus and what I know about the Bible is that I don't think so. I don't think God would want that. But that's just my, you know, two cents.
Yes, God-given right. That just really makes my skin crawl, that whole argument. God-given right. So I'm sure all those school kids were gunned down last night as they're approaching the gates of heaven for admission, I'm sure God will smile on them as sacrifices to the holy right to bear arms in this country. Because that's what they are, right? If that's a God-given right, then those children are simply sacrifices to the cause. Might as well just throw them up on an altar.
The most cynical, right? I mean, and bad faith, right? If that is not a cliche, right? It's bad faith. Like, that is not what any of the gospel said, right? Like, the gospel said to turn the other cheek, not to grab your AR-15.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And here's the dirty little secret, Tracy, on God-given rights. There is no such thing. We give ourselves our rights. We created our rights. The citizens of every free nation in the world granted themselves their rights. And here's another good example of agnotology and how it applies to the gun control debate. One of the primary tactics of this deliberate creation of misinformation and ignorance is to suggest untold consequences. Oh my God, what happens? What will happen if we suddenly curtail the Second Amendment and we limit the rights of gun owners in this country? What's next? Which one of our God-given rights will be sacrificed next? So that's creating this incredible amount of ambiguity over an unknown and unknowable future and all this chaos that may be unleashed if we dare to tamper with this sacred right. What else will be lost? Well, again, that's putting the burden on the people who want to create a safer and better future for everybody, a future in which you don't have to worry about being shot in cold blood if you're a kid at school. That seems to me an eminently desirable future, but it's obscured, it's obfuscated by the notion that, oh my God, if we do anything at all to the Second Amendment, imagine, just imagine what hordes of demons will be unleashed after that. It's just such a nonsense argument.
It is, and I think it has to go back to also the concept of freedom. If for you freedom meant stealing people's land and enslaving others, right? Freedom is scary if then, you know, the way you've crafted freedom is no longer what you wanted it to be, and other people have freedom, because that means they're going to do that to you. And I think that is very much underlying this gun culture that we have, is that there's always this sense that the people that you have harmed intergenerationally are going to come to power. And just even thinking about, you know, the reality of the Heller case that was decided by the Supreme Court that said gun ownership is an individual right. And that was just in 2008. What happened in 2008? The election of Barack Hussein Obama. Right? I want to thread some needles for y'all. So we have a black man coming to power as the president, and the gun lobby is like apoplectic. Like, we've got to get some things settled by the Supreme Court, because if the black people come into power, they can take away our rights. They can enslave us, right? And I think these are these weird things that are going on in the reptilian brain of some people, to say, I've got to have my gun to protect myself. I mean, there are people who are likely waiting for the zombie apocalypse. Like, they've watched way too many episodes of The Walking Dead. Yet they're probably the same people who didn't want to wear masks and have said, you know, having children in schools wearing masks is, you know, trauma, right?
Hysterical.
Well, having children in schools getting shot is way more traumatic. But, you know, that's just me.
Yeah, they're just sacrificing to the cause. That's just the price of freedom. Right?
And yet, it's not their kids, right? And I mean, even thinking about Uvalde as a town, when you saw that press conference that Beto O'Rourke, you know,
crashed.
I don't know. He protested, but was basically sent out of there. It was a whole bunch of white men on stage.
Yep.
And you're wondering, okay, this is the 80%. Hispanic town in Texas, and all the leadership is white. The sheriff is white. The mayor is white. Once again, right, we've got to talk about these racial dynamics that also say these kids aren't our kids. You know, well, we're going to use them as a sacrifice because they're majority little Latino students and their families. And, you know, I just feel like as a society, we've got to reconcile with the through line that is racism if we're ever going to move past this predatory delay of not doing anything, of seeing that there's a problem, knowing that there's a problem, creating the conditions for that problem to be exacerbated and not, you know, paid attention to we get to this point. And, you know, I would like to believe that, you know, this time is different, but I see the patterns I named at the top of the hour.
Yeah, indeed. And what was the Conservative Party line on Beto's interruption of that press conference? That he was out of line, that he was inappropriately politicizing the moment.
Yeah,
right. Not the dead children, but the fact that he was just so rude, just so rude.
He was so rude, just uncivil. Yeah. I mean, my goodness. I mean, he didn't even raise his hand to speak.
All right, we're just about out of time. Maybe get one more call in here.
Francis,
good morning.
How you doing?
How are you doing?
You know, every little child born to this world has a right to live, and has a right to live without trauma. And when we're going to speak about Jesus, all I remember learning about Jesus was when he got angry. The only time I remember him getting angry was with the money changers.
Yeah.
In the temple. And he threw their money on the ground. And the biggest, baddest money changer we have in this world today is the corporate weapons industry. And the total hypocrisy in Texas is that, you know, they're against abortion because they believe in the sanctity of life and children, but it's okay to allow these weapons that totally obliterate children to be in our society. It makes no sense. It's wrong. And I was raised a Catholic, and I know many people who genuinely are opposed to abortion. They're also opposed to the death penalty. They're also opposed to war. They're also opposed to weapons of mass destruction. They're also opposed to military weapons. They're also opposed to mistreating immigrants who are coming to our country from Central America, where our corporations have totally manipulated and destroyed their infrastructures. And they're opposed to many things, but they are supportive of life and things that enhance life, such as universal health care, the end of mass incarceration, the end of apartheid in Palestine. But it's ironic, that's another thing that we're taught. If we oppose oppression anywhere in this world, somehow we are unpatriotic or anti-Semitic or whatever. If we oppose,
I think we're going to have to leave it there, Francis. I'm so sorry, but we are out of time. We're going to have to leave it there. Tracy, take us home.
I would just say, you know, it's time to do something. There are organizations in Oregon and at the national level. Every town is one I named, Moms Demand Action, Gun Sense Oregon. There are lots of organizations that you can get involved in. March for Our Lives is planning a march June 11th, if you're interested. Those are the survivors of the Parkland shooting, school shooting, who are bringing young people together to fight back. I think we want to
this
make this time.
This is Bill McKibben coming at you on KBOO Portland, Oregon.
KBOO Community Radio is looking for a full-charge bookkeeper. Do you have accounting and administrative experience? Do you enjoy working in a highly collaborative team environment? Are you looking for a workplace with a mission? Or do you know someone who is? Go to KBOO.